I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Here to lay another pipe bomb down on wrestling's pay-per-view past, as this is a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. On this episode, episode 9 of the reviews, it is springtime, and that means all the wrestlers are bullish and ready for a stampede, which brings up a good question. What do you call a stampede in spring? Well, a spring stampede. And that was a horrible joke, and I will never say it again. But yes, spring stampede, which of course means we're going to WCW! And we're going to the very first spring stampede back in 1994 for tonight's review. Now this is actually a very interesting, because there were several. I could have gone with, obviously the NWO era and everything, because there would be a Spring Stampede 95 or 96, but there would be 97, and it would go, I want to say, up to 2001? Let me look up my notes. No, to 2000, excuse me. But with that being said, I think 94 was the most interesting. It's why I picked it, because this pay-per-view really was part of that build-up towards Hulk Hogan coming to WCW, which was a big thing at the time. I remember being a kid, and I didn't watch Raw. I really didn't have television. I didn't know where the wrestlings were on television. I just knew about the pay-per-views. And so, I had known that Hulk Hogan had won at WrestleMania. And then I really heard, again, I remember around from 92 to, or at least starting in 92, I had moved to Florida. And again, my father was the big proprietor of me getting to watch wrestling. My mother, not so much. So, living with my mother, and again, nothing against her, but again, it was one of those things to where I really didn't watch wrestling at that time, because again, I was with my mother, and as I said, we didn't have TV. It's funny to look back at the 90s. And think about TV, especially with the way it is now. I look at it as a primitive time. I mean, cable and TV had been around, but cable was still, I think, fairly new. And, like I said, I really didn't know where to find it on the TV. But I do remember hearing, Hulk Hogan is coming to WCW, and that was big news. I mean, it was such big news, literally, it was all over the news. Like, ABC, CBS, Evening News, and everything. I mean, not just, the wrestling newsletters. But, it was part of, It is the NBC Tampa Bay News for November 4th. You know, actually, I can't remember which month or day it dropped. But, you know, there was a big deal being made because, of course, it was at Walt Disney World and everything that Hulk Hogan had signed with WCW. And, of course, the big challenge he laid out was for Ric Flair, who was the current World Heavyweight Championship. He's not the championship itself, though some can argue that. So this was part of that build-up, really, towards that. And in this pay-per-view, we basically got to see a rivalry that, you know, is considered one of the best rivalries of all time continue here as Ric Flair fought Ricky Steamboat for the WCW World Heavyweight Champion. So that caught my interest. And also one other little tidbit caught my interest about this pay-per-view. The venue was the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Illinois. Anytime I get to watch a pay-per-view that either involves these three cities, Chicago, New York, or Philadelphia, I am there. Because you know that crowd is going to be into it. And it, you know, the thing about it is, you can always tell, you know, that the better pay-per-views are in those towns or in so-called wrestling towns, though those three are the wrestling capitals. And when pay-per-views are in other towns that aren't really wrestling towns, you know, the crowd seems a bit dead at certain points because they really don't know when to cheer. This is a crowd that knows when to cheer, and this crowd was awesome all night long. I mean, that's how good they were that I felt the need, before we can get to review, to talk about that. So, with that all being said, why don't we get right into it, shall we? So, Spring Stampede 94 with the tagline, "An event so wild, no ordinary ring could hold it. Lock horns, bullish temper, let the stampede begin." Held on April 17th, 1994 at the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Illinois, with an attendance of 12,200. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble! For Spring Stampede.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
The main commentary team was Tony Schiavone and the Weasel, Bobby the Brain Heenan. And, of course, at this time, Mean Gene Okerlund was part of WCW. And Jesse the Body Ventura had, you know, came over to WCW as well. And they were part of the, you know, backstage commentary team. Of course, it was very interesting to see Jerry the Body Ventura, you know, with just a little ponytail and in a suit. That was very interesting, to say the least. Of course, also sitting at the commentary table was the commissioner of WCW at the time, Nick Bockwinkel. And I've seen some of Nick Bockwinkel's matches. Again, I have watched a lot of old school wrestling, more than I probably should have. So, we actually have two dark matches to talk about that weren't on the pay-per-view because they're not on on the WWE Network, which I watched this course on. They were not part of it, and at least for the first one, I say, thank God. Our first dark match was Danny Bonaduce. I say you can also barely say Bonaduce. Defeats Christopher Knight, probably better known to the world as Peter Brady. Yes, we had a wrestling match featuring child stars. A idea that Fox would later steal. Because we're Fox. We're on the cutting edge. And Danny Bonaduce apparently won. For all you young ones who maybe heard it sound familiar and you don't know why they're famous, Danny Bonaduce was a child actor as part of the Partridge Family, which was a rival show to the Brady Bunch, which Christopher Knight was part of as Peter Brady. Both were about families that where their kids could sing. So what do their parents do? They, of course, exploit them. And that's all I'll say about that. Again, I didn't see the match, so I can't tell you what happened, though I can't imagine it was good. The next dark match was the tag team of Bad Company, which is Pat Tanaka and Haido, defeating the Sullivan brothers of Kevin and Dave Sullivan. And I can imagine that would be a good match, because I do like Kevin Sullivan. I've not gotten a chance to see his brother, you know, but Kevin Sullivan I always thought was at least a decent wrestler. He had great mic skills. And I've seen a bit of Bad Company, and I thought they were pretty decent for their time as well. So we can imagine it was probably a very decent dark match. But then we move on to our pay-per-view proper, and starts off with the legendary Aaron Neville singing the Star Spangled Banner beautifully. Aaron Neville, of course, is a wonderful jazz singer, and I very suggest you check him out. But our opening match of the evening is the man known as Johnny B. Bad versus Diamond Dallas Page, who comes to the ring along with his diamond doll. Now, you know what? This was a very good opening match. Really no botches to see whatsoever. And, you know, it had a good feel to it. It was just a great opening match. Had a lot of unique spots. You know, Johnny B. Bad, you know, would later be known as Mark Merrow, the man who would, you know, bring a Sable, which is, it's sad that, I think that's the big thing his career is known for, that he gave us, that Sable was his manager, and everybody fell in love with Sable and sort of forgot about him. Not that he had an absolutely spectacular career in the WWE, but I do remember him as Johnny B. Bad in WCW, and I loved watching him. He was energetic, charisma, he had a lot of charisma, and it was fun watching his matches. Of course, he had that curly sort of, I don't want to say Prince, I'm trying to remember who, there's a certain singer where, not quite Rick James, but Rick James had the hair too, so because he had the Jerry curl, so he had that Jerry curl, so he had that kind of look to him, that was very interesting, and it was a good match, good back and forth contest. And the finish, I thought, was spectacular. It was very unique. Though, I'll bring up the sort of bad thing about it, but the top rope dive into a sunset flip for the win. A nice maneuver by Johnny B. Bad. And I guess the bad part is, and the brain brings it up, and it's like, I can't argue with it, is the finish is set up where, you know, Diamond Dallas gets thrown back into the ring, and sort of somehow goes to the ref, and I don't know if he says something or whatever, but then the ref pushes him, and he turns around right into Johnny B. Bad diving off the top rope over him for the sunset flip. And of course, Bobby the Brain Heenan brings up, that wasn't fair. Like, And Tony Schiavone's like, I can't argue with this. There's a lot of votes where, like, Tony Schiavone's like, I can't argue with you, Brain. Mind you, Bobby DeBrain throughout this entire match is being classic Bobby DeBrain, partly in due because Diamond Dallas Page apparently gives him a his name encrusted in diamonds. So, of course, Bobby DeBrain, he was in prime form throughout this night. Our next match is for the WCW World Television Championship, as the champion, Lord Steven Regal, with Sir William, faces off against Flying Brian Pillman in a 15-minute time limit match, like I said, for the WCW World Television Championship. I love this match, even with the finish, which I, you know, usually I don't like time limit draws, but this one was entertaining, and, you know, it definitely felt like the rivalry wasn't continue. It was just starting the rivalry. Of course, Brian Pillman had only recently came out of the tag team he was part of, with, you know, the Hollywood Blonde with Stunning Steve Austin, who is on this pay-per-view, mind you. Another reason I picked this pay-per-view. And you know what? It was a good back-and-forth contest. I mean, seeing Steven Regal in his prime, it's hard to say what his prime is. I do find it interesting in watching this match and seeing some of the maneuvers he does. It's like, oh, wow. You see that maneuver that he obviously teached to Daniel Bryan, who Daniel Bryan uses now. So it's like, you see a lot of maneuvers that Daniel Bryan will use. So again, you get that connection to the modern time, which I thought is great in any of these pay-per-views. You know, because a lot of older wrestlers, of course, go on to train the younger wrestlers, and those younger wrestlers will a lot of times take those maneuvers. So again, it's like the same reason, like when you see Triple H do the knee, of course you know that's from Harley Race and the such. But, you know, this was a fantastic match. From start to finish, and even though I don't usually like time limit draws, this one really worked out. And so I very much enjoy it. Of course, Regal retained the title at this time. Our next match gets nasty and dirty, and I love it. And it seems like a match that should have been on ECW. We have the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobbs and Jerry Sags, versus Cactus Jack and Max Payne in a Chicago street fight for, well, I thought it was for the tag team titles. That's why it's okay. There's a thing to where they say four titles are to be defended this night. They kept saying that the tag team titles were on the line. But here it says it wasn't. Or at least the notes I have. So that's, I guess, one bad thing. That's very confusing because they kept saying the tag team titles were on the line. But that being said, this was just a knockout brawl, like, exciting from start to finish. The crowd was into it. You know, I think this is the match to where Brain tells Tony Schiavone, you know, if they come over here and you look for me for help, don't. I'm going to be long gone. Yeah, classic Bobby DeBrain Heenan. But, oh my God, just a match. People through tables. There's a great spot where Jerry Sags, I guess, is preparing to, like, I think, pile drive Cactus Jack on a table that they had set on the stage, and the table gives way, and they go through it, both of them. It's one of those botches that's not a botch that anybody planned or anything happened. It's just for, like, wow. And it just adds to what's going on with the ring. I mean, going through tables, going through the merchandise stand near the stage, and then the finish, which is Sags literally hitting Cactus Jack over the head with a goddamn shovel. I'm like, my God, that was brutal. And, of course, the pin. And it's like, and not just like a little shovel. I'm talking about like a snow shovel. I mean, I guess this is why we have snow shovels under the ring in the SmackDown video games. But yeah, it's like, holy shit. And of course, Nasty Boys win and retain. So yeah, just a great little street fight match that I think is very enjoyable. Not that, you know, people being hit over the head and bleeding and everything is wonderful, but, you know, you got the point. We're wrestling fans. Our next match features stunning Steve Austin with the greatest promoter in the world, Colonel Robert Parker, versus the Great Muta for the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship. Now, this, again, another great match that I very much enjoyed. Great back and forth. You know, of course, since the last time we've seen Great Muta, which was back in 1984 at the original Starcade. You know, he's obviously improved and has a lot more move to his repertoire. Of course, the big move being the moonsault. Obviously, the face here. And, you know, it was a great back and forth match. Both wrestlers showcased themselves wonderfully. You know, again, it's that thing of, you know, we're watching Steve Austin and stunning Steve Austin, and you see a little bit of those things that would make him successful as Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, obviously, he has more of the, you know, a different move set, and, you know, of course, his big finishing move was a submission move, which he never gets locked in this match, called Hollywood and Vine. But, you know, great match. The only bad thing about this match, and it's one of the things I have always hated about WCW, because I think it's a stupid rule, but it's basically something that was used to, like, when they don't want to give up the championship, and it's another way of disqualification. But there's this rule, like, if you, I guess, intentionally, like, with a backdrop or hip toss or whatever, over the top rope, if you throw somebody, it's a disqualification. And I think for modern-day fans, that looks a little strange. It still looks strange to me. I mean, I never got why that was a rule. I mean, I guess it's something to do with safety or whatever. I'd have to look back to why that rule is in there. But at the same point in time, I think to a lot of our younger fans and whatnot who never even heard it, because WWE didn't, or at the time they were known as WWF, but that wasn't part of their rule book. It was only something, I think, from, like, the Southern Territories. And it's a very strange rule, to be quite honest with you. I mean, it was something to make them different, but it just seemed strange. And it's, you know, for, I mean, you want disqualification, just have a disqualification happen. To where, you know, but, yeah. It's just a very weird ending to the match, because it happens all of a sudden. And if you don't know what's coming, and you don't know about the rule, it I'll leave you confused. So while it's a good match to watch, it's not exactly the best match for people who've never seen early WCW. Or know a lot of those WCW rules, I should say. Our next match of the evening is for the features Rick Rude versus Sting for the WCW Intercontinental World Heavyweight Championship, which is very weird because, you know, the belt looks like that classic World Heavyweight Championship belt. And I'll bring this also. I never saw Ric Flair with the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. I can't remember if I missed it or whatever. It was probably underneath the robe. But Sting had a great entrance. Rick Rude had a great entrance. Of course, they get cut off by a Harley Race, who, you know, says that his client, Big Bad Vader, because, you know, this is Harley Race in his Paul Heyman mode, wanted to face the winner. Now, it was a great back and forth match. Again, Rick Rude does what Rick Rude does well, though it was a bit slow. And it wasn't as interesting, I felt, as the other matches. I mean, it was good back and forth between the two wrestlers, but there was a slowness to it. You know, this is the thing with WCW that I've always felt, is that, you know, when you watch WCW, it's always had this problem to where, like, the early matches were always the better matches. The undercard, the wrestlers coming up through the ranks, because they had something to prove, were always putting on the better matches. And then you had the same people who'd been there for the past 10 years in the main event. Now, not obviously with this main event, but in this match in particular, it seemed slow. it seemed like the chemistry wasn't there for the match. And, you know, there was a lot of botches in this match, and this match just had a sloppy feel to it. I thought they exchanged off of each other in a good back and forth, but just sloppy. In particular, the setting up for the finish, where the finish is, Rick Rude goes for the Rude Awakening, which is this net breaker that he does. It seemed like at first it was supposed to be Vader, because Vader and Harley Race come down and attack Sting throughout the match, which creates chaos and everything, and it becomes a clusterfuck. But the, you know, like I said, the finish is, he goes for a Rude Awakening. I imagine Vader was supposed to come in with the chair and try to hit Sting and hit Rude over the back instead, causing him to lose the title. Well, there's this, I guess, this mess up with Nick Bockwinkel or whatever, and so Rude, trying to go for the Rude Awakening, he's obviously waiting for the chair shot to come. It doesn't, so he has to like reverse it and allow Sting to reverse it, and they have to go for a little bit more and try to set up for it again. This time Nick Bockwinkel comes in, and he's the one who actually does, or not Nick Bockwinkel, Harley Race is the one who comes in and hits him with the chair, causing him to lose the title to Sting. And I believe this would probably set up a feud between Rude and Vader. But, yeah. It was just very, very sloppy. And there was a lot of botches, and I felt it was very sloppy in this match. By far, I thought Sting versus Rude was the worst match of the night. By far. Our next match was Bunkhouse Buck with the greatest printer in the world, Colonel Robert Parker, versus the natural Dustin Rhodes in a bunkhouse match. Again, this was what I find it interesting. I watched this earlier tonight. I was eating dinner, and my mom decided to have dinner at the table. So this is the match my mom sat through and watched. She's like, really? This is the match you're going to see? Wonderful. But yeah, back and forth, brutal, bloody, great, just street fight. Very interesting how they come in with all these clothes and eventually all of them get used as a weapon. You know, Bunkhouse is, I'm blanking on the word of the item, but his suspenders, he uses to choke. They both bring out their belts and everything. And of course, a very predictable finish with the brass knuckles, I guess. I think that takes away from it a bit. But at the same point in time, if you're looking for just a pretty decent street fight, this delivered. It was a very good street fight. Then you had the grudge match of the century. Goddamn WCW. Where you had Vader, Big Bag Vader, with Harley Race versus The Boss, who is the Big Boss Man. You know what? This was a great heavyweight match. And, you know, and, I mean, they hit each other, they body slammed each other. They all went for the moves, and if you know the wrestlers, you know the moves. I mean, it was okay, but the real highlight of this match is Vader going to the very top rope and hitting the Vader salt. I mean, you're talking about a 400-plus man doing a moonsault off the top rope. That's goddamn impressive. My mouth was literally gaping open. I'm like, I cannot believe what I just saw. So that definitely made the match work for me, and it made it very enjoyable. It was a great sort of super heavyweight bout. Now, there's something very interesting that has to be talked about here. There's a storyline that happens where, you know, Harley Race grabs the handcuffs and the nightstick, and it's starting to beat Boss Man with it while Vader's back is turned, and Boss Man grabs the nightstick and starts hitting him with it. That being said, it leads to Nick Bockwinkel, you know, stopping Boss, the Boss. And backstage segment, he takes away the nightstick, the handcuffs, and the name The Boss from The Big Boss Man. But it's interesting, the reality of this is that the WWF at the time was threatening to sue WCW because the Boss character was too similar to the Big Boss Man, which is strange because they're the same goddamn person. It is the Big Boss Man, but they couldn't call him the Big Boss Man, so they just called him the Boss. So, you know. I didn't get it when I saw it, but going and looking back at the history and looking behind the scenes, okay, now it makes a little bit of sense. But, you know what? It's a match worth seeing, if nothing else, just for the Vader salt. That brings us to our final match of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen, in our main event, we have the WCW World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship in a match sanctioned by the Boxing and Wrestling Organization of the State of Illinois, because this is a time where, you know, wrestling promotion still had to get permission from state fight commissions, which is, looking back on it, ridiculous because it's not real. My God, this is everything this match was predicted to be. He promoted as, it is another great match in the Ric Flair Ricky the Dragon Steamboat feud. Just back and forth, the flying heads. You know, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is one of the most amazing wrestlers you can ever watch. And if you get to watch him in his prime, watch his, you know, matches in his prime. In particular, this match, and of course the matches from 1990 and 1989 between Ric Flair and Steamboat, because there's a reason, that this rivalry is considered one of the best, because it is. I mean, the matches are legendary, and this one was no different. And the crowd, oh my God, the crowd was into it. Great commentary from Tony Schiavone and Bobby DeBrain. And Bobby DeBrain, he brings up a great point in the match. It's like, oh, why doesn't anybody do it? And which is, he brings like, why does nobody ever go for Ric Flair's legs so he can't put it into figure four? I was like, I don't know. You're right. But just great back and forth. A lot of great maneuvers. Even when they're doing the same, they've done the same maneuver in a match. Like, they do Ricky the Dragon Steamboat does two superplexes to Ric Flair in a match. But the first one is from the second rope. And then the one towards the end of the match, he's on the very top rope. And so there's enough difference in there, even though they're technically doing the same maneuver, to make it feel different and make it unique. And there's this great, obvious chemistry between the two. And, of course, you had the unique ending to it that was, you know, I really don't like these type of endings, you know, at least in this case to this rivalry, because they wanted to make both wrestlers look strong, but they didn't want to take the title off Ric Flair. And so the ending is, it's a double pin, you know. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat goes for the double cross arm chicken wing, which is the same maneuver which he won. And throughout this match, they keep talking about how Ricky the Dragon Steamboat beat Ric Flair 5 years ago in Chicago for the World Heavyweight Championship, his first one at the time. And he won it with a double cross-arm chicken wing. And so it happens again where he has a double cross-arm chicken wing and Flair's up. And then Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, you know, goes to the ground, and basically it's almost as if he does a tiger plex, but really not to, it's more like he goes to the ground and then attempts to arch back. But supposedly what's supposed to happen is it's a double pin. You know, Flair's shoulders down, but his shoulders are down. It just, I guess for me and my perception, it looked like Steamboat's arm or shoulders were up. So maybe that was a slight botch on Ricky, but you know, it just looked weird, that finish, a bit. And, of course, the finish was a no, like, they call it a no contest, but it was, you know, a double pin. And because of a double pin, you know, it gets presented to Ric Flair. Awarded to Ric Flair. I mean, I guess that's the only sort of negative I can say about this match, because the match from start to finish was wonderful and excellent. The storytelling, the chemistry, everything. It's everything you need for a great match. I'm left with mixed feelings on the ending, to be quite honest. So those are your matches. Overall, I thought this was a good pay-per-view. I mean, it had a whole lot more great matches than bad matches. I mean, really, the only bad match I can see is Sting versus Rude, because it was just sloppy, had a lot of botches, and slow. But with that being said, all the other matches were very exciting. The crowd was into it, which made me into every match. The only other negatives, I don't think there's any 5 or 4. Flair and Steamboat may be a 5-star match. The other matches at best are probably a 3.5. But at the same time, this is a very, I think, interesting pay-per-view to watch and worth watching. Again, for the Ric Flair Steamboat match, for the Lord Steven Regal Brian Pillman match, is absolutely worth watching. It's a good match to see Steve Austin before he became Stone Cold. And you know, like I said, with the exception of Sting versus Rude, all the other matches are pretty damn decent. And I also think that because it's part of that, you know, excitement towards Hulk Hogan coming, and of course him challenging to face the champion, which was Ric Flair at the time, and that was the big, you know, dream match that everybody thought would never happen, Ric Flair versus Hulk Hogan. It's a great part to watch as part of that building and seeing, okay, here's where all these former WWE stars are starting to come in. So, at the end of the day, I give WCW Spring Stampede a 4 out of 5. It's a really good pay-per-view, and I think worth watching, especially if you really want to understand WCW in its sort of prime, shall we say. Or at least towards the start of its prime. I think it's safe to say its prime was 94 to 97. I think, you know, that was really the prime of WCW, because that's when they were really kicking butt. And so this is part really started as the start of that, and so I definitely think worth watching. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. If any comments of any kind on this review in particular, or any upcoming pay-per-views that I will be reviewing, remember, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to www.facebook.com and searching for The Absolution Network. You can also leave us a comment in the future, for all you future people, on Twitter. I'm trying to get on there. My plan is to hopefully, by the end of this week, I'll try to at least get it started. And, so I hope to soon to be on Twitter if I can. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. You can also make sure to check out all our other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum and Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. Gene and Chris and the Shaft Plus podcast that you can find at www.shaftplus.com. My Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting site that features CMG's Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, Always remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes Matty J and the WrestleCast, Michael Bailey in Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas in the Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher in the Major Spoilers Podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner in the Two Tube Freaks Podcasting Network, along with many others. So that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. Next week, we finish out April with another look at the pay-per-view known as Backlash. And this time, we go to 2002, as Hulkamania is running wild. That's right, Backlash 2002, Hulk Hogan versus Triple H. So until next time, all my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me, CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, they bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand among the feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's the meaning, my love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them mothers live that fast life.